once again to enter the secret passage. So follow me if you dare, into the library, through the sliding bookshelf and down the shadowy stone steps. What lies on the other side of the secret passage tonight? I'm sure you're dying to find out. The next journey into the unknown is titled
Terribly Harmful. Deep in the heart of the Olympic rainforest, three friends sit around a campfire sharing stories. They pass a bottle of whiskey between them. Phoebe, the oldest, sits next to her partner, Luther. Pete, the youngest and a recent hire of the National Forest Service, sits across from them, warming his hands over the fire. It's a cool summer night, and clouds dance across the moonlit sky while pillars of smoke rise from the coals and embers that warm their hands and faces.
So this guy, they call him Mostly Harmless.
Like, that was his trail name?
Well, it wasn't his real name.
Obviously.
The authorities found him, like, starved and all gaunt and stuff. They said he just, quote, died of natural causes.
A lot of people die from exposure in the wilderness every year. What made this guy so special?
Well, for starters, nobody could identify the body, but like a ton of people knew him. Other hikers, locals, he'd made a name for himself. But that's the thing, nobody knew him as anything other than Mostly Harmless. Everywhere he went, he paid cash, and then all these people started coming out of the woodwork, claiming they might know him. He had some pretty unusual features too, like a big scar on his abdomen and apparently some pretty phenomenal teeth. But everywhere he went, he used a pseudonym.
What about those teeth or fingerprints? None of that turned anything up?
Nope. No fingerprints on record. No match with any missing people databases. And a bunch of people claimed he was their relative, or friend, or something. But then one day, an ex-girlfriend actually ID'd him.
Bingo. So what? He was just escaping a bad breakup? A spurned dude who cracked?
No, not exactly. They found out he was a techno geek with a background in coding and a background in being a terrible boyfriend. It turns out he was just a weirdo who tried to escape his past from the sounds of it.
How bizarre. Pete, any missing creepazoids up here?
Pete had just recently finished his course in forestry school and received his dream job offer, a position with the National Forest Service. The woods had always been like a second home. Growing up east of the Cascades, he had spent more time in the mountains than anywhere else. When most of his classmates had been trying to score tickets to the Sasquatch Music Festival, Pete was in the woods looking for Sasquatch.
Actually, yeah.
Ooh, do tell.
I went to some lectures on missing people, mostly on reporting, locating, and providing first aid. But during one of my sessions, they were in the middle of this big case. Three people all went missing in a short span of time.
Great. Three people go missing in the Pacific Northwest? Oh yeah, that's fine.
Luther let out a nervous laugh. Pete and Phoebe had been going camping for years. They had been backpacking more times than they could count. Luther was much greener. Moving to Washington from the deserts of Arizona, he was far more familiar with chlorinated swimming pools and hissing cockroaches than hot springs and grizzly bears. He had taken some convincing to go on a three-day backpacking trip through the Cascadian rainforest. A lot of convincing.
Don't worry, Luther. Lightning almost never strikes in the same place twice.
So, as I was saying...
Sorry, I'll shut up.
The first person didn't seem too bizarre. A family reported their grandfather missing. He went walking in the woods constantly around Mount St. Helens. It was a sad story. He just up and disappeared one day. They told us how these cases come up, especially in cases of dementia. People get lost or get injured and aren't able to get help. But they almost always find the remains. They never found his.
That's sad.
He was a transplant from Alabama, so there was some speculation that maybe he just didn't know the area well enough to be out on his own. But the second case was way more curious. Two siblings, a brother and sister, went out hiking in the same area and never returned. They were kind of a weird couple. They weren't well connected, didn't have many friends, and had fallen out of touch with their family. but they both had jobs and apparently left very little trace. In most cases, they would have likely been written off as people just abandoning a life they'd rather leave behind. Like that mostly harmless guy you were talking about, Phoebe. But since it was in the same area and within a week of the old man, it set off some alarm bells. In the lady's apartment, they found a bunch of books on cryptids, magic, and other pseudoscience subjects. They actually warn us about this stuff. They tell us it's fine to be interested in mythology and whatnot, but not to get too invested. It can make people see things that aren't there. It can cloud your judgment, when more often than not, the simplest explanation is almost always the right one. You know, Occam's razor. Ultimately, the search was called off.
The woods are a weird place, man. Some people come out here to escape, but sometimes the woods won't let you escape.
That's one of the creepiest things you've ever said.
Hey, I'm just saying that the forest is a living, breathing thing, filled with other living, breathing things. We've been coming out here for years, and there are parts of the woods that go far deeper than we'll ever know.
As Phoebe spoke these words, a cold silence fell over the group. Just then, a chill wind picked up, sending embers drifting skyward.
Okay, I think I freaked Luther out enough. After all, it's only our first night out here. Let's maybe pack it in for the evening?
Sounds good. Can we sleep with the lights on?
Pete slept in his own tent. Luther and Phoebe had been dating for years, but had never shared a tent. Pete dreamt of Mount St. Helens that night. He watched from above as the mountains erupted, extinguishing the stars just like the coals in their fire earlier that night. He felt a cold sensation as he looked down at the volcanic mountain and saw a great, colorless, shapeless mass emerge from its core. He couldn't explain what he saw, but he felt a growing sense of unease as the mass pulsated and expanded until it covered the entirety of the land beneath him. Suddenly, he was surrounded by darkness. Then, out of the immaterial ooze, a pair of eyes appeared, opening to reveal a void unlike anything Pete had ever seen. A low rumble gave way to a dull roar, and just as he felt himself being pulled toward it, he woke up. Sitting bolt upright, Pete watched as the left wall of his tent pressed inward, beat by the now howling wind. His eyes widened when he noticed a faint orange light bobbing a short distance away.
One of the most common causes of injury in the forest comes from falling branches and down trees.
He spoke quietly to himself, wondering if Luther had ventured out to go to the bathroom. He unzipped his tent and tried to call out, but the wind overpowered his voice. He looked over to Phoebe's tent, a yellow canvas with a big, gaudy orange rain cover.
Phoebe! Luther!
Pete saw that the zipper to their tent was fully unzipped. He walked over and looked in. He could see in the moonlight that both Phoebe and Luther's sleeping bags were empty. What was more concerning was their backpacks were gone. He hadn't doubted that Luther might make a mistake like venturing too far from the camp, but he knew that Phoebe was more experienced. They had no expectation of a windstorm. The weather reports were for crystal clear skies and balmy heat, a rarity in this forest. But the climate in a biome such as this is bound to change without a moment's notice. Deciding that he should investigate, he grabbed his electric lantern and ventured to the edge of the clearing where they had settled, and he tried to call out again, this time with more force.
Hey! Where are you all at? Hello?
Still nothing. Whether it was the wind overpowering his voice or something more sinister, Pete's worry increased. He squinted and could see the bobbing orange light a short distance away, just beyond the nearest crest. It looked like it was moving slowly.
Why would they be leaving? It's 3:45 a.m. Sunrise won't be for another hour or so. Way too early for a hike, and these are no conditions to be out in. Phoebe knows this.
Hello? Is that you guys up there? Hey!
Just as Pete called out again, he watched Phoebe's tent get ripped out of the ground and tumble into the forest. Pete's own tent remained steadfast. He decided that he had to take immediate action. In a matter of minutes, he had broken down his tent and packed his belongings. Thanks to his training, he was able to do this with great speed, even in the worst conditions, and was ready to go in minutes.
Maybe Luther ventured out, got hurt, and Phoebe is tending to him? Either way, they might need my help. That must be them with the light up there. I better go up and see.
Indeed, the bobbing orange light mirrored that of his own incandescent lantern. He threw his backpack over his shoulders, secured the buckle at his waist, and ventured tentatively into the trees. He could hear branches snapping and falling all around. This made him increasingly uneasy. Just then, the bobbing light up ahead stopped moving. And as suddenly as it appeared, it went dark. Pete hugged the trunk of a tree for stability as the wind picked up. He heard a loud snap behind him. Before he could turn, he felt a blunt crack at the base of his skull and fell face first into the forest floor.
Oh, my head. Where am I?
He rolled over. It was broad daylight. His head was pounding. He felt a wave of nausea as he sat up. Coughing, he spit up a mouthful of blood and dirt.
I was... What happened? Phoebe? Luther?
His vision was blurry, and his head felt like a blender on the pulse setting. He sat for a few minutes and regained his faculties. At his feet, he saw a branch the size of his leg.
That must have been what hit me. I remember something. It came from behind. Ugh!
His vision came in and out of focus. Looking at the branch, it didn't appear to be a fresh break. It had snapped long ago. He didn't ponder this long, as his attention quickly shifted to his friends.
Phoebe! Luther!
Hey!
Pete was caught off guard by the anonymity.
Hey! Are you okay?
Oh, hey. Yeah. I mean, no, not really.
A short distance away, a woman stood atop a trail. She was around Pete's age, give or take a few years, and was outfitted in modern hiking gear. She looked like a trail runner, but with a backpack on, like she was prepared to camp.
Hey, I'm Barbara.
Hey, I'm Pete.
Geez, are you okay? What happened?
My friends? Ugh, my head.
Pete slumped down at the edge of the stream. Barbara spoke with an energetic confidence.
You need some help. Let me help you.
She set her backpack down and produced a clean rag and a can of first aid spray.
Here, it looks like you have some blood on your head. You mind wiping it off? I don't have any gloves. Oh, sorry, I'm a doctor.
Barbara flashed a laminated medical badge. Pete's vision was still blurry, but the name on it looked close enough to Barbara.
Here, clean yourself up. Once you do, I'll spray some of this antiseptic on it. Let me look into your eyes. No concussion. That's a good sign.
My friends, I was with two people. Did you see them? My age?
A woman and a man? Yeah, I just saw them. I mean, I saw two people. I didn't talk to them.
Pete felt a glimmer of hope.
Where were they? Were they okay?
They seemed okay. They just looked like backpackers. They were headed off the opposite direction.
Can you take me to them? Ow!
The antiseptic stung like a bee.
Well, I can take you that way. I'm out here hiking. I never get too far away from the main roads. If we head that way, the way I came, we can reach a ranger station easily by nightfall. It's a decent day hike, but you look like you can handle it.
Pete, even in his disoriented state, felt a renewed sense of purpose. He jumped to his feet and stabilized himself. Following Barbara along the trail, they set out towards the ranger station. A light drizzle settled down on their heads. It felt like they had been hiking for hours. Pete checked the time, 5:03 p.m. The sun was sinking, and he knew they had very little time before it would be dark again. Then, the worst imaginable sound.
Oh, no.
The concern in her voice bothered Pete. Not because she was concerned, but the way she was concerned. It bothered him because he felt the exact same thing. If the conditions became unsafe, they would either need to get to the station or find a place to take shelter. He pushed the thought from his head and walked faster. Fast enough so that he was next to Barbara now, shoulder to shoulder. So fast that he even passed her. As he did, he started to call out again.
Phoebe! Luther!
Phoebe! Luther!
For some reason, it bothered Pete that Barbara did this. It was almost like she was mocking him, or that she knew it was hopeless, and she was just humoring it, like a parent to a child. Regardless, Pete continued. The conditions grew steadily worse. As they climbed a steep, muddy hill, he started to grow nauseated again. He stopped to regain his balance and rested his hand against a sapling. When they reached the top of the hill, his heart sank even further. Nothing was in front of them except for endless forest. If there was a road, they were seemingly nowhere near it. Again, as if matters couldn't be worse, lightning started to flicker. On their left, a large rock formation loomed. Barbara recognized it and pointed with her index finger.
Look, see that rock? We can hide out there until it passes.
Pete shook his head. They had to keep going. They had to. He repeated this to himself, even though every ounce of his intuition was telling him that Barbara was right.
I know what you're thinking. But we have to. It just isn't safe. Look, if the conditions improve, we can go out. We're close, and I'm not afraid to hike at night when we're this close to the main road. But I just can't let you go any further.
Another wave of dizziness. Pete's knees almost buckled. He wondered if he could even make it any further right now if conditions were perfect. He was struggling, and his head was pounding. As he considered the prospect of continuing on his own, a splitting sound cut through the air just behind them. Both the hikers turned, just in time to see a giant tree ripped from its roots by a massive gust of wind and crash into the ground. Pete simply turned and followed Barbara. They approached the cave in the mountainous rock. The sun had set almost entirely, and the mouth of the cave faced the northeast, so the sun had long since passed over. Pete slumped down against the rock wall inside. It was mostly dry. Barbara put down her pack and pulled out a small cooking stove. A basic unit, nothing fancy. It reminded Pete of Phoebe. She had never bothered with expensive camping gear. She was fine buying whatever she could get on sale at the nearest grocery store and just replacing it when it broke. Or when she just forgot things and then had to overpay for something at the nearest gas station. Barbara pulled out a couple pouches of dehydrated food in a canteen. With every waning second, Pete could hear the rain beating harder and harder and the wind howled across the mouth of the cave. Maybe it was because he was covering his ears to block out the sound, or the intensity of the rain, but he didn't even notice the shadow of a large figure approaching.
What the hell are you guys doing out here?
His shallow, scratching voice startled the would-be spelunkers.
Jeez, you scared the shit out of me. Who are you?
Relax, it's okay. You got stuck in this windstorm too, huh?
How'd you guess?
The man had a large bundle of logs in his arms. He cradled them like he was carrying a baby. A large, lumpy, wooden baby. Kneeling down, he dropped the pile of kindling on the cave floor and sloughed off his backpack. Pete noticed the orange hilt of a flare gun protruding from one of his pockets. It reminded him of Luther. He had demanded that they bring one with them, even though he had laughed at the idea at the time.
I'm Devin. I'm looking for my dog. We were hiking, but he got spooked by the thunder and took off. Bizarre. He's a fire dog. Dalmatian.
Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out a photograph. An old Polaroid of him and a Dalmatian in front of a fire station. He looked much younger in the photo, as his hair was still a dark brown. Pete estimated he was in his late 40s, maybe early 50s.
I'm a firefighter at the Port Angeles station. The weather wasn't supposed to be like this.
Pete would have felt sorry for the man, but he barely even registered the words he was saying. All he could think about was his friends and what could have happened to them. In a normal situation, he would have kept moving. Staying in a cave with two strangers he had just met today seemed far riskier than the forest, which had always been a sanctuary. But his head was pounding, and he knew that any chance of Phoebe and Luther's survival depended on his survival. And at this point, the cave with two strangers seemed like the safest bet. Devin built a small fire, boiled some water, and made a cup of soup. Barbara ate whatever dehydrated stew she had brought. They both offered Pete some grub, but he couldn't bear to eat. After hearing about their situation, he agreed that they should wait it out overnight.
The service road's pretty close. I was on it earlier today. Honestly, if you were up to it and it wasn't goddamn Twister outside, I'd say go for it. But right now, I just can't imagine anybody making it very far.
In the flickering fire, Pete silently surveyed his new companions. Barbara had grown increasingly quiet since reaching the cave. Devin himself seemed to be a few words. They exchanged a few pleasantries, but mostly kept to themselves. In a movie, they might exchange humorous anecdotes or encourage each other about their respective situations. In real life, they all just seemed to be lost in thought. As the flames danced against the cave wall, Pete noticed that Devin had a tattoo under each ear. He couldn't make them out exactly, but they looked like small sideways Wi-Fi symbols, or sound waves, maybe. Other than that, he looked more or less like an ad from a Sears catalog. Barbara, too, projected normalcy, but looking less Sears catalog and more REI catalog. But looks can be deceiving. He was no fool. Even trustworthy strangers can turn out to be creeps. He kept two canisters of bear spray with him at all times. He thought about this as he pitched his tent against the cave wall opposite the two new members of his impromptu search party.
I'm gonna lay down for a little bit. Try to wait this out, okay?
Of course. We'll give you a shout if it clears up.
As Pete lay in his tent, he tried to tune out Barbara and Devin's conversations and fall asleep. But the worry about his friends, and even his own situation, kept his mind racing. He thought about his options, the weather, his friends. All this thinking eventually led to an undeniable exhaustion, and Pete's eyes began to feel heavy. Pete awoke quickly again, but this time it was because nature was calling. He stumbled upright and stepped out of his tent, zipped it shut to keep any available warmth inside. He walked closer to the entrance of the cave, near a crag in the wall, and peed for what seemed like 2 minutes. He decided to take a moment and walk to the cave entrance and look out, in case he could see that small orange light again, or any other possible sign of his friends. Barbara and Devin happened to approach Pete's tent at that very moment, thinking Pete was fast asleep inside. They were whispering to each other.
He's asleep, right?
Are you kidding? He's lucky to be alive. He's so concussed that brain should be oozing out of his ears.
We need him alive. Maybe we shouldn't have let him sleep.
It's the only way. He don't need to be lively, just alive.
Have you got the others?
They're already back there. You ready?
Yeah, let's lock the tent. Probably don't need to. He might even be in a coma by now, but go ahead and put the lock on it.
Is it awake?
Don't speak like that. You know the rules. You know.
After a few minutes of scanning the forest from the cave entrance, Pete decided to return to his tent and plan his next moves for finding his friends. As he approached his tent, he heard a scuttling noise and some whispering a short distance away. He jumped behind a section of protruding rock. In the strobe-like light of the fire that was barely alive, he looked down the cave toward the noise. He saw two large animals, maybe 60 feet away, crawling on the floor, moving like scorpions on desert sand, their dark, oily skin glistening against the flickering flames. closing his eyes as tightly as possible and hoping to wake from yet another dream. He peered through pursed eyelids and hoped to see the wall of his tent. Instead, his vision adjusted to the darkness. It definitely was Barbara and Devin, but they were on all fours, and both naked, and covered head to toe in some filthy cave detritus, fighting like hyenas over some scraps of a leg of lamb or something on the ground. His eyes drifted upward. He saw two mutilated animal carcasses, but something was attached to one of them. It was tattered clothing, a t-shirt. Luther's t-shirt! A soft cry worked its way to the tip of his tongue, but he smashed his lips together, refusing to let it slip. Frozen in terror, he watched as the feral Barbara and Devin picked over the remains of his friends. Whether in his imagination or reality, he swore that he saw Barbara too had a faint tattoo matching the one Devin had. That symbol of sound waves or whatever it was just below each of their ears. Her hair must have covered it up before. Between them, he saw another formation. This one was clearly artificial. Four large chunks of rebar hammered into the cave floor, forming a rectangle on the ground. One just large enough to fit an adult body. Attached to each piece of rebar was a manacle, and remnants of meat and bone and hair were visible. A massive stalactite only a few feet from the rectangle began to rumble. The same low, guttural noise from before, sending a shockwave of silence throughout the cave. Both of the feral demons froze like startled animals, then began to back away slowly, assuming simian positions on their hind legs, their hands now held tight at their chest, their backs arched. The mass rumbled again, this time slowly expanding horizontally in two directions. As it did, Pete squinted and saw two yellow-black angular eyes appear at the tip nearest the floor. Suddenly, the once lifeless rock expanded entirely in a nebulous fashion, wings extending from both sides, revealing a body unlike any creature Pete had ever seen, like a skeletal biped mixed with an oversized sewer rat with matted fur, but with talons. It was clinging to the ceiling of the cave. Each dark eye seemed to extend indefinitely into its misshapen skull. Transfixed, his entire body grew cold. The long, jagged mouth of the creature opened slowly, as if yawning, revealing row after row of jagged, yellowed teeth. Another low rumble reverberated and echoed through the cave, increasing in pitch from a rumble to a shriek, culminating in a piercing screech echoing off the walls of the cavern. The fire suddenly extinguished. Pete was so terrified, a hoarse, throat-raking breath escaped his mouth, startling even him. He took one deep breath, regained his faculties, and attempted to slowly approach his tent to get his backpack. He extended his hands and felt for the zipper. It was somehow locked.
It's stuck! They sealed it with something.
Just then, Pete remembered something.
The rear flap! The tent has a small window at the back. Maybe.
Remembering that the tent had a small airflow portal, roughly the size of his head, he turned and felt around until he found the zipper. It opened. Pressing his fingers into the mesh, he ripped the perforated surface apart. The nylon thread separated. He reached inside for his backpack. Gone. He heard faint voices echo in the distance. Barbara and Devin. But the words were unclear.
My backpack! They must have taken it!
A flash of lightning illuminated the unholy temple. In one brief moment, he saw his backpack against the far wall. Devin's was next to it. Pete remembered something. Attached to Devin's backpack was the flare gun. And inside the right rear pocket of Pete's pack were two cans of bear spray and a canister of kerosene.
Warning, contents under pressure.
The lightning flashed again, and Pete saw his path. Crawling across the floor, he was within arm's length of the packs. Snatching the flare gun and ripping it from its holster, Pete grabbed his backpack, blindly made his way back to his tent, and forced the satchel through the escape hole he had created. He used the butt of the flare gun to smash the glass canister of kerosene. As he did, the sound of calling voices echoed off the cave walls. He tossed the canisters of bear spray into his tent like two small grenades and retreated to the protruding section of rock near the mouth of the cave. He heard Barbara's voice approaching.
Okay, I'll get the zipper. And when I do, you grab him. I have the zip ties, quick and easy.
A third flash of lightning cast a blinding wave of light over the scene. Pete saw Barbara and Devin approaching his tent, carrying a knife, zip ties, and a flashlight.
Okay, as soon as I open the tent, blast him with the light.
Pete held the flare gun out at arm's length, aiming as best as he could in the darkness. He heard a slashing, followed by a zipping noise, followed by the bright illumination of an industrial flashlight. The light reflecting off the cave walls painted Devin and Barbara's faces, and Pete watched in triumph as their expressions turned from deviant, twisted smiles to horrified looks of surprise.
Burn in hell, you demons!
Pete pulled the trigger. The lightning bolt bounced into the well-set trap, igniting the kerosene. Like watching a film in frame-by-frame slow motion, Pete saw his tent erupt in an orange plume of molten, scorching fire. The bellowing screams of his would-be captors echoed like a cacophonous symphony. Music to Pete's ears. He took off running, eager to leave everything about the cave and its contents behind him for good. He ran for what felt like miles. The wind settled a bit, as did the rain. The lightning, however, persisted, which Pete was thankful for. It acted as a guiding light. The sound of thunder grew more distant, but Pete started to hear it get louder and closer again. Peculiar, he thought, but he kept his focus on running. He had no intention of ever seeing those eyes and that beast again, but he couldn't help but wonder if he aggravated it. Suddenly, everything became slow motion. His left foot extended out into space and landed on nothing. His right foot followed, and for a brief microcosm of a second, Pete imagined himself as Wile E. Coyote, running out onto thin air, suspended in animation, just long enough to look down and realize he had just run off a steep embankment. Flailing and falling head over foot, he tumbled down the muddy hillside. He felt a snapping near his shoulder, followed by a cracking somewhere in his foot. Searing pain shot through his body as he finally rolled to a stop after what felt like hours. Nearly unconscious from the pain, he looked up and saw flat ground extending out in front of him. In the moonlight, Pete saw a long, well-groomed dirt road. Reaching at a nearby vertical metal beam, he pulled himself to his feet. At the top of that beam was a road sign. Forest Service Route 12. Letting out a choked, resilient cry of success, Pete hugged his dislocated arm to his body and stabilized himself. Rejoicing silently, he hopped on one foot out of the ditch and onto the road. Just then, a new bobbing orange light appeared. This one much different, much more artificial, and more of a yellow hue. It grew in a semicircular pattern, expanding on the road as a rumble approached. It was a truck! The truck's engine grew louder as it approached. Pete slumped to a sitting position, resting his back against the roadside, drifting yet again into a sleep spawned from absolute exhaustion. Pete awoke and found himself slumped against the side window of a moving truck. He started to shout and flail, but found himself restrained by his seatbelt. Reluctantly and still vigilant, he relaxed. Suddenly, Pete couldn't help but reach over and hug the man, like he'd just been reunited with his dog after a year apart.
Whoa there, hey, you're gonna make me crash. You okay? Are you okay?
Pete simply smiled and let his head lay against the headrest in a moment of true relaxation.
Easy, hombre. You have several broken bones. Need to get some medical attention here. It looks like you took a mighty spill. Those eyes don't look great neither. You got a concussion like I've never seen one.
Pete looked up at the bright, vivid moonlight. Suddenly, the ranger slowed down and veered off the road into a muddy dirt trail. Pete felt his stomach leap into his throat as they turned.
Now look, there was a windstorm last night. Power lines are down. They blocked the main road. We are not getting out of here until the morning. It's okay, all right, because there's a camper overlook just up ahead. We have emergency rations. There's a landline inside. We'll be able to rest up for the night and head out in the morning.
Pete's relaxation faded. In the faint moonlight, he could swear that he saw something circling. A faint screech echoed off in the distance.
Don't worry, Pete. I'm a ranger. You can trust me.
As he said this, Pete could see the faint outline of something on his neck. He squinted in the pale white moonlight. He swore he could just barely make out a faint black tattoo. A tattoo that looked like ink lines of sound waves just below his right ear.
It's okay to sleep with the lights on.